with the new research recently published showing that the damage of esophageal reflux is not exclusively as a result of the acid, but very directly related to the enzymes that are refluxing simultaneously with the acid, we have decided to revisit a previous interview with Dr. Jamie Kaufman that was aired over 2 years ago explaining this exact phenomena. Dr. Jamie Kaufman, author of The Chronic Cough Enigma and the book Dropping Acid, we will be discussing the epidemic of reflux as well as asthma and what we can do about it in our own homes with our own families. So listen, learn, and enjoy.
Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Well, welcome back. Today is another one of those very special shows, very special day. We are speaking with Dr. Jamie Kaufman. Now, many of you might remember that she was on a show about a year ago, and her information literally was so revolutionary, it changed my practice. Many people called me about it because they saw a difference in their physical symptoms and their health. And what was the book called? It was called Dropping Acid, and it was about gastric reflux. Now, what she has done, she's written a new book, and it's called The Chronic Cough Enigma, Acid Reflux, Asthma, and Recalcitrant Cough. That's a cough that we just can't get rid of. The Path to Cure. What Dr. Kaufman has done is outlined a epidemic in this country, an epidemic of gastric reflux, GI problems, and many problems that we have no association with GI. Talks about how we can identify them. This really is a people's book on how to work through these problems, problems that you never had an idea were connected to your GI or your stomach and your gastric reflux or even stomach acid. The book began, and I'm going to pass it to Dr. Kaufman. The book began with a foreword with Susie Orman. Now, many of you can relate to this because what happened is that Susie Orman has been being treated for asthma a large portion of her life. And the asthma was becoming so severe that she was having to cancel speaking engagements. And she said when she did a taping of a PBS special, they had to stop the taping because she was gasping for air. And she was on multiple asthma meds and steroids and sprays and wasn't getting better, barely even maintained. As a matter of fact, she felt like her life was slipping away. And she went and saw Dr. Kaufman, and she was identified as having a silent reflux syndrome. Dr. Kaufman treated her, and all these years of treatment for asthma, which gave almost no relief, and now she does not experience asthma as a symptom. So, Carol, we're speaking with Dr. Kaufman. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
So, are you excited?
I am very excited. I found this book to be quite mind-blowing. I have a few questions, but I'd like to hear from Dr. Kaufman. Give us some idea how she got into this and how she's treating her patients successfully.
Well, let me just quickly introduce Dr. Kaufman. Dr. Kaufman is one of America's leading and experts on acid reflux and voice disorders. She is New York Times best-selling author of Dropping Acid, the Reflux Diet Cookbook and Cure, that offers refluxers a unique understanding of silent reflux and natural cure. And now she's written this book, The Chronic Cough Enigma. Dr. Kaufman, welcome.
Well, it's so nice to talk to you again. I'm sitting here listening as you've introduced the topic, and there's so many areas to talk about today, I'm not even sure where to begin.
Nor I, but first let's focus on one area. Why is this such a problem? Now, you're talking about this reflux becoming an epidemic. Can you explain
that to us?
Take
charge of your health is really where we are. Healthcare in America now is fragmented. We have too many specialists. And when it comes to reflux, particularly reflux into the throat, the airway. What's the airway? From the tip of your nose, through your throat, through your voice box, through your bronchial tubes and trachea and into your lungs. There are so many patients, so many people who have reactive airway disease, things like asthma and allergies and sinusitis that actually have reflux. There are so many people who have problems with chronic cough. And as, I've not given you a number yet, but 80% of people who have asthma, in my opinion, don't have it, based upon our studies. So that take charge of your health. This book was written because patients and people who have chronic cough and asthma that's not getting better, by the way, now account for approximately 1 in 5 Americans. So the question would be then, of course, well, how could this happen this way? How could it happen? And I think some of the blame needs to be laid at the feet of some of the specialists. When we started having these endoscopes for evaluating inside people, the gastroenterologist took the simplest and most obvious symptom, heartburn, chest pain after eating a greasy meal, whatever, and said, heartburn is reflux, reflux is heartburn, it's all about the esophagus and we own it. And when I came along and started talking about airway reflux and silent reflux, how it could occur at night and then cause mischief and trouble and symptoms all during the day, they put it down. And now we sit here 25 years later, and we have patients who have chronic cough, who don't have a lung problem. In fact, most lung problems are due to reflux, including even the most serious ones. And it's worth having a discussion about lung transplant programs and what they've discovered, but not on the front end of this. And so we have GI doctors who don't know anything about airway reflux, don't have a test for it. We have lung doctors who don't understand airway reflux. And we have ENT doctors who are generally handicapped by having insufficient training, instrumentation, or even a diagnostic test. So we have now this epidemic. And, of course, why we have an epidemic has to do with how we eat and when we eat and all of that. And in truth, probably how and when we eat is the root cause of, diabetes, obesity, reflux, sleep apnea, asthma, and the list goes on, coronary artery disease. Which common diagnostic problem today is not related to diet and lifestyle. And yet we as physicians offer procedures and pills. So there needs to be a rethinking.
Now, you speak about how many of your ideas have been rejected by the medical society. Why are they not open to this? They see that there's an extreme problem. We also have been really led to believe that the problem is solved because we just take a purple pill for the next 20 years, and now we will not have that problem. Is that...
Well, you need to let me stop and talk about the purple pills for a moment.
Please do.
The most important paper that's been published this year is a national Danish study, you know, Scandinavian study, a national study of 10,000 patients. This is a study of people who have esophageal disease related to reflux. The conclusion of the abstract says long-term use of proton pump inhibitors, these are the purple pills, you know them all, Prilosec, Nexium, Dexilant, Acifex, all of them, the big heavy guns that are used routinely, it seems, confers no protection whatsoever against the development of esophageal cancer, the fastest growing cancer in the United States, 850% up since the 70s. Furthermore, use of proton pump inhibitors long-term appears to be associated with an increased risk of the development of esophageal cancer, an increased risk. So when you see, you know, someone on television saying, you know, eat what you want and take a pill, it's the American way, what's happening is very much like putting dirt under the rug. When you put dirt under the rug, if you do it week after week, month after month, year after year, you're surely going to pay a big price. And so what's happening is people are covering up the symptoms, but not preventing progression of disease. And so it is important to start thinking about root cause and not covering up the symptoms. And this is a paradigm shift. Now, why aren't more doctors interested? Well, you know, I started out as a laryngeal surgeon, fixing voices with surgical techniques. And about a year ago, I sat one night about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had a discussion with myself. I said, you know, you're going to spend the rest of your career predominantly counseling people about their diets and their lifestyles. And after a little bit of conversation with myself, I said, and you know what, I'm okay with that. Doctors don't want to talk about it. They don't know much about nutrition. People with obesity and diabetes get operations. Someone doesn't say that, listen, you've had your last chocolate chip cookie. We're putting you in an exercise program, putting you in a diet program. We're going to give you back your life. We're going to make longevity a goal, and we're going to do it the right way it should be done, and you're going to have to do it. And we don't hear that kind of talk.
And even sleep hygiene, you're writing about you shouldn't be eating within 4 hours of when you lie down and go to bed.
Well, you know, first of all, some of it's, you know, lifestyle. Nationally, I mean, Americans are working longer hours by and large. People like to exercise. They leave work later. They go to the gym and they go swim. Whatever they're going to do, by the time they've got from there and maybe they've taken care of some children's issues, it's 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock. And what are they? They're hungry and they're tired. And so, what do? They eat the big meal of the day. Maybe they're not so careful about what they eat. Maybe they have some alcohol or because their brains are going fast and it'll help wind them down. And so with a little bit of a buzz, they lie full on the sofa and start refluxing just then and then reflux all night. And the thing about reflux, which means, by the way, just backflow, it's backflow. The more you reflux, the worse your valves work. The worse your valves work, the more you reflux. The more you reflux, the worse your esophageal function. So no, those people, when they then lie down, the esophagus, which is the swallowing tube from the throat to the stomach, begins to look like Lake Michigan. And the airway, the nose, the sinuses, the voice box, and the lungs, that's just Lake Superior. And so it just oozes up into those places, and all night it creates inflammation and tissue damage. This 8 o'clock, I jokingly say, if we could make a law that the kitchen closed at 8 o'clock in America, for children before that, of course, obesity would go down, diabetes would go down, reflux will go down, sleep disturbance and sleep apnea will go down, asthma and so on. So late night eating is a huge factor for many of us, and it's one that must be controlled for many. Without that, there's no hope for good treatment.
Now, in your book, you have very carefully outlined the symptoms of this disease and given us a map to follow so we can even sort through these irregular symptoms, sort through the symptom of asthma and understand where it's coming from.
But I think the symptoms are very important. By the way, I didn't answer your question. I sent a paper to the one of our most prestigious ear, nose, and throat journals, and the paper was called the Diagnosis and Management of Non-Pulmonary Chronic Cough. Non-pulmonary means it's not the lung problem. It's not a lung problem causing the cough. For example, smokers have a lung problem. This is not about them. Mm-hmm. The paper was rejected outright. And in rejecting the paper, the editor said, the focus of this paper is too broad for our journal, which was basically saying we would like to beg off this whole question of chronic cough. So if the lung doctors pass and say the lungs are okay, we're out, and the ENT doctors say, okay, we're out, and then the pulp, there's no one, the allergist, no one, who's going to take care of these people? So this book was written because the paper was rejected in large measure, and it was also written with the idea that you could actually go around the inertia of the medical establishment and give people enough information to, for all intents and purposes, self-diagnose and then go educate their doctors so they can get adequately treated. And this is an unconventional idea. It was the same idea, by the way, with dropping acid as for the chronic cough enigma, that the medical establishment just wasn't addressing root cause, and that root cause and self-identification, particularly when people have difficult to diagnose or falling through the cracks kind of diagnoses, is important. So now getting to the symptoms. One of the characteristics of silent reflux, and silent reflux means you went to bed and the stuff basically sat in a puddle all night and dripped into your lungs and all those places, your sinuses. People have ear symptoms as well. People who have that kind of reflux usually have a constellation of symptoms, a constellation. And that includes postnasal drip, chronic throat clearing, hoarseness. If you wake up in the morning with hoarseness like a whiskey voice, that's reflux at night for sure. Difficulty swallowing, stuff getting stuck, particularly pills, and of course cough. What kind of cough is reflux related? Cough after meals, cough bending over, cough when you lie down into the bed at night. And finally, let's just talk about asthma. Right now we have a public service campaign to teach the nation in or out. So here's what we know. And apparently most doctors don't know this either, but we know this for sure. Reactive airway disease, meaning something happens and the airway shuts down. It can happen with allergies, it can happen with true asthma, it can happen with reflux. The whole system is sensitive to different triggers. If you have trouble, and ask yourself this question, if you have asthma or a diagnosis of asthma, when you have trouble breathing, do you have trouble getting the air in during inhalation or out during exhalation? If you say in, you do not have asthma. Let me say that again. Trouble breathing in is never asthma. Prolonged exhalation, trouble breathing air out, a noisy extended wheeze is asthma. But trouble breathing air in can sound like crowing, or even a noise like this. And it turns out that this happens because in the throat there are some very, very specific switches, and those switches respond to acid. And when acid comes up into the throat, those switches shut down the airway to try to protect the lungs. So in or out is a big point here. And when you start talking about symptoms, difficulty breathing in versus difficulty breathing out is one of the most important things I hope is a takeaway from this talk.
It was definitely a takeaway for me when reading the book. I just went, with a giant light bulb. That's what we know so directly. That's what we're taught in school. Breathing out, breathing out. That's the problem when we're in doing our training. And yet, we're not listening for the difference.
2 weeks ago, a patient of mine who had come to me first, maybe 2 months ago, I said, you don't have asthma. You don't have asthma at all. You don't have it. Stop taking the asthma medicine. Let's get your reflux worked up and then treat it. Don't you want to understand this in or out? And I explained more about the actual physiology. She went back and she told her doctor, and her doctor was astounded. And I said, to me, the only thing astounding about it is the doctor didn't know that. It seems to me essential.
What about in your book, you're talking about moderating the acid, and it's because of pepsin. How does pepsin play
into
all this?
Now, you asked a complicated question, and it's an important one. It turns out that when we talk about acid reflux, that's really we're calling it the wrong thing. Because we all have an acid taste, or some people do, and so on. And acid is important. But it turns out that if you look at how, for example, esophageal cancer is caused, throat cancer is caused, there's a stomach enzyme that's a bad actor, and it's called pepsin. None of the drugs are called pepsin. There are ones called Pepcid and Prevacid and so on. No, pepsin is the stomach enzyme, and it's a very, very powerful enzyme. In fact, biochemists use pepsin if they want to study proteins to break them down. So pepsin is one of the most powerful breaker downs of protein. Here's how it happens. When you reflux or have backflow, whether it be during the day or night, imagine if you had lobsters and seawater coming up. And the lobsters are the pepsin and the seawater is the acid. And everybody says, oh, it's the seawater. But up come the lobsters riding on a wave of seawater, and they attach themselves, say, to your throat or to your esophagus. And those lobsters just go munching away. And what do they need? They need acid. They need acid to survive. Acid is what activates pepsin. Pepsin produces the damage, and it's acid-activated. And that's why dropping acid was important. We kept trying to understand why the reflux epidemic was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I had the book almost done. And then I kept saying, why is everything in a bottle so acidic? Why is everything in a bottle so acidic, except water? And all of a sudden, my assistant said, I found it. 1973, following an outbreak of food poisoning, the Food and Drug Administration decided that acidification would be the way we would kill bacteria and prolong shelf life. Unfortunately, manufacturers of bottled beverages have taken it far. So that today, almost everything in a bottle except water is more acidic than stomach acid. In fact, someone said last year they found a mouse in a Mountain Dew, a diet Mountain Dew. And the Mountain Dew defense was, that's impossible. Mouse dissolves completely, bones and all, in a diet Mountain Dew.
Oh.
So imagine have pepsin or lobsters living on your throat lining and esophageal lining. If you are drinking many sodas a day, and by the way, it's not just sodas, it's all soft drinks. Even things you think are healthy are loaded with acid. Energy drinks, fruit drinks, even things that are acidic, like orange juice, have more acid added. And now it's being disguised, so you don't even know it's in there. For example, a young singer brought me, very proud of her bottle of coconut milk. And I looked at it, and it had all natural, all organic, and sure enough, there it was, coconut milk and a vitamin C. So then we measured the pH or the acidity, and it was profoundly acidic. So the ascorbic acid and citric acids, the two most common ones, were being added to drop into the very, very low pH range so nothing would grow. So in trying to protect us from getting infections like botulism and so on, what happened instead is they gave us an entire, basically everything we drink that's bottled, which is a lot of us drinking a lot of things, or at least used to be, so acidic that when you have those lobsters living in your throat or your esophagus, they're activated to the max. And that's how come we got so much reflux disease.
And it's also taking place in children, is it not?
Oh, it's terrible. Yes, of course it's happening.
It used to be an older, heavy person.
Overindulging. Baby food, same thing. You know, I mean, banana is a very non-acidic fruit.
And generally,
you know, when you test the baby food, it's all very acidic as well. Same thing, killing bacteria as if it was the only concern.
And it's in the baby food, it's not even on the label.
Well, it's hiding. It's hidden. It's not. It's all organic because someone has decided it's okay to add ascorbic acid and call it organic, but it's not okay.
One thing that surprised me very much in one of the pages in your book, you talk about foods that are okay to eat and drinks that are okay to drink. And you included chamomile tea, but that's the only herbal tea.
Well, a lot of the herbals, first of all, are mixtures. We know that mints, for example, make the stomach valves relax. Some of the ones that are citrified, I mean, one of the zingers and all that, we know they actually cause reflux. So we've simply taken chamomile because we know it to be pretty good for the refluxer. And by the way, if I'm writing on a Friday night, which I do occasionally, I'll get home early, I'll have dinner around 5, and I'll probably work until midnight or 1. If I start to get hungry around 10 o'clock at night, I'll go into the kitchen and make myself a little pot of chamomile tea or a little tea with Manuka honey, and then I'll carry it into my study, and I find that soothes my stomach and it satisfies, so I don't have to eat at a late hour.
What do you think?
Chamomile tea's pretty good.
What do you think? I want to get back to my question. Because I'm seeing it with newborns, I'm seeing it with young people, I'm seeing reflux disease in so many young people. Why do you think they are being so adversely affected by this?
Well, no one can say for sure why, but we know that most infants will have some reflux. We know that, you know, colicky babies are reflux babies. We know, by the way, digression, I'm here at a medical convention, and one of my friends is a well-known pediatric person, and she said to me, you know, it's amazing, all these newborns are coming in with a diagnosis of asthma. And she says, of course, they don't have asthma, they're refluxing. So it's not clear. Mother's breast milk is safe, and most formulas are safe, but as soon as you start with solid food of any kind, I mean, all the well-known brands, I don't want to bash them individually, but they're all just acid-loaded, and it seems to me it's the crucial variable. Since every child has a little bit of reflux, imagine those lobsters coming to reside, say, in the throat or in the lung or whatever, and then an acid diet. By the way, this brings me to a point.
At this point, we're going to take a short break. We're speaking with Dr. Jamie Kaufman, author of Dropping Acid, The Reflux Diet Cure, and The Chronic Cough Enigma, How to Recognize and Diagnose and Treat Neurogenic and Reflux-Related Cough. And we'll be right back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and we're speaking with Dr. Jamie Kaufman, author of Dropping Acid, The Reflux Diet and Cure, and the book The Chronic Cough Enigma, How to Recognize, Diagnose, and Treat Neurogenic and Reflux-Related Cough. We're jumping back in, and I hope you're listening and paying attention. There's lots to learn here.
One of the groups that are hard to treat are college students, or students in general, young people who are well-behaved six nights a week. And on Saturday night, they go out and they drink too much. And on the way home, they stop and they get a couple of burgers and some fries, and they reflux all night. You say to yourself, well, if they only reflux all night, why don't they, one night, why don't they get better? And it gets back to this question of tissue-bound pepsin. So they reflux on Saturday night. They get pepsin all over everything. The lobsters are clinging to every surface. And then they get up in the morning and they have orange juice. And then they go to the gym and they have Gatorade. And then they drink four or five diet sodas over the course of the day. And then they have, so it goes. And so you can imagine basically loading yourself up with lobsters once a week and then having enough acid to make those lobsters very, very happy and munch away. So I think that it's the fact that there's acid in baby food. And my friends who have small children, my grandchildren, I mean, a huge amount of energy and special preparation of foods to avoid these kinds of problems. And by the way, there are other food additives that aren't so good either.
Well, we were also discussing with Jeffrey Smith on the GMOs in infant formulas.
We have a big problem.
Yes.
I'm writing a book now. I don't know what the title of the book's going to be, but the subtitle is The Food Industry Made Us Sick, and the Healthcare Industry Made Us Poor. And we've come to a point, but I'll tell you something,
and
there's hope. First of all, who would have thought the FDA would have taken trans fats off the market? When Mayor Bloomberg in New York tried to do it, there was a big uproar about, you know, we shouldn't be messing with people's desire to make themselves sick. But the reality is that the FDA did take trans fats off. And you know very well it wasn't fast food companies that were going after this. It was a grassroots movement.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I live in New York. You know, I'm on a pretty restricted diet in many ways. I happen to be, and that's another story, on a gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free diet. And I don't think of it as a restrictive diet, by the way. I tell my friends I'm the queen. I just eat the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that that I have a home in North Carolina where people don't have the same access to walk into a restaurant and say, I'm on a restricted diet, and they say, no problem. Meanwhile, I've had my house in North Carolina a year. When I first started shopping at Food Lion at Advance, North Carolina, I had to hunt to find an organic chicken. Okay, now that green section is massive. Secondly, all the best of the frozen foods, the ones that don't have preservatives, frozen is a good way to avoid preservatives, that section has exploded. When I said to the manager, why aren't you carrying a certain cereal that's very, very healthy? 2 weeks later, the cereal was there in big supply. So I do think that there's a grassroots movement, particularly the parents of small children, who feel very strongly that the cause of many of these diseases is dietary and in many cases related to food additives. And I don't think there's any getting around it.
I don't think so either, and I don't think that we have kind of tiptoed around the issue with the big elephant in the room, and I think the apologies are over, and that we have to, as health caregivers, we have no choice but to face the issue. There is a new movie that just came out last Friday called Fed Up. It's with Mark Hyman and Dr. Lustig and Gary Tabor and Michael Pollan, all talking about the food industry and how it's getting us sick. And when you're finished...
Well, which one of our diseases isn't related? You know, in doing this book that I started, my research assistant, I mean, diabetes is up 700%. Obesity, I mean, look at all the numbers. You know, these trends... Trends is the wrong word. These horrendous diseases that afflict the majority of our population all basically follow per capita soft drink consumption and fast food. You watch those two curves, and it looks like the curves of the diseases. And so I think we must deal with it. Now, that said, when I gave a talk at Tulane a while back, and one of the junior residents said, so, Dr. Kaufman, when you tell your patients, you know, you're a New Yorker, right, that you're going to have to change how they eat and when they eat, don't they just tell you to go to hell? And I said, no, they don't. The idea that people can take control. And then that's when I, you know, this whole idea of writing for a sophisticated public. Now, sophisticated doesn't mean that, you know, you went to graduate school. Sophisticated means that you're willing to take the time to try to understand and then to make a plan of action which is going to have a significant impact, make a big difference. I think that the question you asked about babies is like really on a lot of people's minds. And so when I have a young person who happens to be the patient herself or himself that's in the 20s with the babies at home, I say to them, you are about to become the tip of a great iceberg that's going to affect your friends and your friends' children and your families and how you think about food. You know, the opposite end of this is that many people have become food addicts. And the idea that we have such changes in healthcare at the same time. I mean, when I was little, my mother made dinner every single night. The chickens came from a local farm. We got corn when it came in July or August. It didn't come from some foreign country or Florida. It wasn't grown with GMOs. And meanwhile, I remember having an earache, and a terrible earache. And the doctor came about 5 o'clock, and I got a shot of penicillin. I remember feeling relief within about 30 minutes. That was when doctors made house calls, not business plans. So what's happened in our lifetimes, and this needs to be addressed as well, is health has been treated as a commodity. It never should have been treated as a commodity. There is a tremendous inelasticity of demand. If you need an operation, it's $2,000. Oh, I have that. It's $250,000. I don't have that. Will you take my house? And so what's happened is corporate medicine has bred a tremendous pressure for procedures and drugs and getting them so that they can be reimbursed. The idea that obesity should be treated with surgery, to my way of thinking, is idiotic.
It is amazing to watch this and see the people lined up and see the problems that they go through afterwards, yeah, and their digestive problems and the nutrient deficiencies that they go through, yeah, and the way they feel and the depression they experience. And then also the fact on some level they get control back of their life on some level.
It really is interesting because, you know, going back to the chronic cough, a young woman came to see me who is an active woman in a very, very hardworking, busy firm. Everyone was leaving late, eating late, drinking too much, and so on. She came to me with bad lungs, sent by a lung doctor. She was not overweight. I mean, she was maybe 30 or 40 pounds overweight. Almost 1 year to the day after I first saw her, we graduated her. Graduation means healthy, lungs clear, no reflux, eating well, by the way, looked like a professional athlete. She got herself, you know, slimmed down and toned up. And graduated. Graduated to what? A long, healthy life. I'll tell you an anecdote about me. I was still looking in the mirror in August, and I looked and I saw that skin that you see, you know, the sort of old lady crinkly stuff that you get. And it horrified me. I went like, when did that happen? And then I thought to myself, I'm going to be 80 in 15 years. Meanwhile, about 2 months later, I was visiting my doctor, and I had a terrible psoriasis, bad psoriasis. Didn't get better with Embril, the shots in the legs and all that kind of thing. So she said to me, go on a gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free diet. And I did. And the psoriasis has gone away. Now, I'm not saying everyone should do that, but it's very interesting to me that when I began to face the prospect of my own mortality, which, of course, we all face, I began to understand that there was no other person who could take charge of this except me. There was no other way. So that you have to add up and start looking at your own addictions. Are you really addicted to those two glasses of wine? Because those two glasses of wine let you turn off the noise of a really pounding day. Are you addicted to sweets, and you got to have them every night? Are you addicted to caffeine, and you can't get up without having, you know, a half ton of it, and then you need sleeping pills to bring you off it to go to sleep? So you have to begin to examine how we've evolved into an unhealthy society. And all of this has to do and brings back around to the question of asthma and chronic cough. So I'm going to tell you something that I think your listeners will think is rather interesting. So in my office are four women. Not everyone is overweight, but some are, some aren't. Two have had children who had asthma, and they were bringing things into the office that were not okay. I said, no, and I'd be throwing them away. So I just dumped your ginger ale. So anyway, in January, I announced proudly to my staff that year-end bonuses, which I'm under no obligation to give, but that I give generously at the end of the year, that year-end bonuses would be tied to how close they were to their ideal weight by the chart, to the cholesterol, triglycerides, and to the reflux finding score when I examine for reflux.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, not only is my staff better, but the child whose asthma was putting him in the hospital stopped getting nighttime, bedtime snacks, and the asthma has gone away on the 7-year-old.
Oh, that's wonderful.
This is an example of how an employer can influence the health and health outcomes. And my staff, by the way, they're the ones who wanted to have a big conversation about GMOs. They've gotten very sophisticated in less than 6 months, and it's really a wonderful thing to see.
It's quite gratifying when you see that you can make...
Everybody's losing weight, and everybody needed to. By the way, a healthy diet, you lose weight.
Pardon?
A healthy diet, you lose weight if you're overweight.
Every time. Now,
you don't have to go for something special. You don't have to do for anything crash.
You have a symptom index that when you go through these symptoms, chronic cough index, flex symptom index, RSI, the glottal closure index, you have this index. And from this index, by answering these questions, you can very closely diagnose yourself. Can you explain that a little bit? I'm just going to say one thing. I love this book in that it is so empowering. You have shifted back to us. This is a very empowering book. Even with people who don't have the obvious symptoms of reflux, particularly with those people, this is a very important book. Tell us
about this.
Oh, it really is.
I think there's also, you know, it's very important to realize that this is going to be a coming trend. It's very interesting to watch how drug companies used to spend all their time and money going to doctors and taking them out to dinners and trying to educate them. They call them drug reps. We've not let a drug rep in my office, let alone have a conversation with them, 20-something years.
Oh, really?
But it's interesting how the drug companies started going around the doctors. Okay, well, who's advertising on TV? Let's see. Viagra, Cialis, and Embril, and all of these drugs, Prilosec. Mm-hmm. I mean, half the ads on television are, so what they're doing is directly marketing to people to then have them go and demand of their doctor to give them those pills. What I'm doing is a little different. What I'm doing is saying, okay, what you really must have first, before you have anything else, is an accurate diagnosis. And since your asthma may not be asthma, here are some tools with which you can actually self-assess. You say, well, gosh, isn't that a dangerous thing? No. The doctor's not getting it. They're already seeing a doctor. The doctor's not had it right, or they wouldn't still be coughing. They wouldn't still be wheezing. They wouldn't still be doing any of that stuff.
So, and they wouldn't be buying your book.
Adding a little ammunition. It's just a little more ammunition for the patient.
And those questionnaires are things that you use regularly in your practice, are they?
Absolutely.
Not?
Absolutely. Yes, one of the chiefs at the Mayo Clinic said, can we use the Kaufman Chronic Cough Index? And by the way, for people who are looking to find me, the easiest thing you can do is actually just Google dropping acid. Timothy Leary doesn't even come up anymore. So if you Google dropping acid, I mean, I've got a, you know, websites, and I've got all this stuff. But the Chronic Cough Enigma is in, you know, both of these books, Barnes and Noble's, understands these are both significant health books.
I want to read some of the varied symptoms that we're talking about. We all know of regurgitation, but how about excessive dental caries? Sometimes we know that chest pain can be some form of reflux, but we don't know that directly. Shortness of breath, choking episode, hoarseness in the throat, vocal fatigue, where our throat just gets tired and we can't really talk and our voice is breaking. Chronic throat clearing. Oh, it's just allergies. Just allergies. Mm-hmm. Excessive throat.
I think it's very interesting because I remember 25 years ago, I was giving a course at one of our national meetings on reflux, and someone asked me about the relationship between sinusitis and allergies and reflux, and I said, well, I'm not sure about that. Well, now, 25 years later, I am sure about that. Among the angriest groups of patients who come to see me are people who have had multiple sinus surgeries and still have the same symptoms. What we've found now, it's really quite interesting, is if you look at people who reflux at night and you look up into the nose, way up top, it's called the nasopharynx, behind where the little thing hangs down and mm-hmm. above that, we see findings in the nose, and those findings look like cobblestones. And that cobblestoning can be so thick, those pavers, that they start to interfere with the sinus openings and the eustachian mm-hmm. tubes, so you see ear symptoms and nose symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the symptoms there are, postnasal drip is number one symptom of reflux. And by the way, when you see people who have chronic throat clearing and they talk about postnasal drip, it's not postnasal. They have nasal drip, but they also manufacture that mucus locally in the throat. You see where it comes from. It's dripping on the vocal cords. Those are the ones who make a big racket trying to clear their throat and wear their voices off until they can get the glob moved. We're talking sinusitis that isn't sinusitis, allergies that aren't allergy, and asthma that isn't asthma, shortness of breath in a young person, particularly if it comes on over a period of weeks. These are all, and by the way, there's one other thing that's very interesting. The more you reflux, the more infections you get, respiratory infections, and the more respiratory infections are, the worse your reflux. And so the body only has one set of defenses of the lining membranes that interface with the outside world. And so everything assaults them, drying during the winter when the heat goes on and there's no humidity. And allergies can be a mitigating factor as well. All of these things add up to make the lining membranes less resilient and more susceptible to reflux. So this is really, in truth, multifactorial. Don't get me wrong. A lot of people have asthma, have allergies. A lot of people have allergies. These things are all very much interrelated in some people. It's not just one thing or the other. That said, number one on the hit parade is silent reflux.
Very interesting, because with chronic bronchitis, chronic sinusitis, we're finding a lot of reflux as a cause, but generally we don't think of bronchitis when we think of reflux.
I absolutely do. I have to tell you a story. I have a woman who's a 95-year-old. She runs her own store. She is a completely independent, bright, able, obviously much younger, acting, living woman. She came to me originally with chronic cough, and I've managed her for a couple of years. She came to me in January with a, and by the way, you don't need any tests. A bronchitic cough is a wet cough. You hear it and you hear a rattle. One of my patients called it a duck call cough when you bring up that stuff in the morning. So that's the diagnosis, one cough and you can hear bronchitis. So she came in with bronchitis, and I know what was happening. She was going out to dinner and drinking more wine. I really had to read her the riot act. It took us 3 months. And by the way, we looked at her throat and said, yeah, your reflux is worse. It took us 3 months to get her bronchitis gone and got her back on the wagon, if you will. So that's the kind of thing where you might save someone's life, because bad lungs in someone in their 90s is pneumonia and can lead to death.
Mm-hmm.
And which brings me back to this whole question, by the way, of nighttime snack. So many people in nursing homes die of community-acquired pneumonias. What's that? Community acquired. We didn't get any bacteria to grow in the cultures. Well, here's what I think happens. You get ginger ale and a chocolate pudding before they go to bed, and that's what ends up in their lungs at 2 o'clock in the morning. They die of ginger ale chocolate pudding pneumonia.
Mm.
So we shouldn't be giving people in nursing homes late night snacks before bed, nor children.
That would be a very interesting to really look into, because they're not getting good food very often in nursing homes. And
well, nutritional care is going to be, I believe, the next great public health, and it really deserves to be a public health issue for all of us. I think it's going to resonate it's going to start as it has as a grassroots movement, and you're going to start to see some political traction. One of the things we want to do is get pH labeling or acid labeling on all bottles and cans. Obviously, I've already contacted the FDA, and obviously they're resistant to even having a conversation about it. Yeah, unfortunately.
Many times when you go to your doctor and we look at reflux or any type of gastric indigestion or what they say we're dealing with is a chronic disease. And then...
Not true.
Exactly. Could you explain that to us? Because you have a diet here, and you have four phases of it. You very directly explain that you can heal people.
Here, let me sort of first give, the 25 words or less. Okay, so you have asthma, and you've listened to this show, and you're thinking, maybe it's reflux. Okay, let's see you do a two-week detox. This is it. No eating or drinking within 4 hours of bed, and that means no lying on the sofa either. Nothing out of a bottle or can except water, and preferably alkaline water with a pH greater than 8, which is non-acid, the opposite of acid water. No alcohol. Okay, only fruit you can have is melons and bananas. The only meat you can have is chicken or fish or shellfish. All the vegetables are good, but no onion, garlic, tomatoes, or pepper. Anything that says the word pepper on it. And all the grains are pretty good. And the breads and the rice and the quinoa, all the egg whites only, no yolks. So if you can do that for 2 weeks and you notice a big, big change, then you really, in 2 weeks, it's only 2 weeks, anyone can... It's the detox everyone should do almost. There's a therapeutic trial. Now, while I've said that everyone will get well with that, it's not true. A lot of patients come to me. They said, I bought your book. I've been on the diet for 2 weeks or 2 months, and I'm still not doing well. It is true that if you've refluxed long enough, your whole system is basically out of whack. And you are going to need some drugs, but it's not always acid suppressive drugs, and it's certainly not always purple pills. But there are people who need help jump-starting the system. Imagine that the esophagus is a lazy horse, and it's race time. So you're going to have to put a jockey with a whip on that horse to get it moving again. That said, reflux is a vicious spiral going down, which till the whole function of the whole system is really not very good. But once it is restored, for the vast majority of people, you can get normal digestive health again.
You're saying that for the vast majority of people, this is a curable disease.
Yes, and I'm also saying we are what we eat, and there's nothing that could be more important today.
We have been speaking with Dr. Jamie Kaufman, the author of The Chronic Cough Enigma, as well as Dropping